crashing heavily into the workman's table, pushing it back, exposing Luz. The severed sculpture head that had apparently struck the scale rolled eerily to rest on the floor near Luz's face, seeming to stare into Luz's eyes. As Luz rolled back under the table, more blue wings blurred in her peripheral vision. More scale. Four of them flew in loose formation toward a recessed alcove about halfway up the wall, where Luz now saw Emmett standing, brandishing a long silver saw. Emmett must have thrown the head that had saved her from the scale. He was the trespasser whose entrance through the ceiling had enraged her kidnapper. Luz had never thought she'd be so happy to see an outcast. Emmett was surrounded by sculptures and platforms and pedestals, some shrouded, some scaffolded, one newly beheaded, and by four impossibly old scale angels hovering closer to him in the air, cloaks extended, like shabby vampires. These stiff black cloaks seemed to be their only weapon, their only tool, and Luz knew well it was a brutal one. Her pained breathing was evidence of that. She suppressed a gasp as Emmett pulled a starshot from a quiver beneath his trench coat and held it out in front of him. Daniel had made the outcasts promise not to kill the scale. The scale in the air backed slowly away from Emmett, hissing, "Vile! Vile!" so loudly that it caused Luz's captor to stir on the table above her. Then the outcast did something that amazed everybody in the room. He aimed the starshot at himself. Luz had seen Daniel suicidal in Tibet, so she knew something about that emotion's desperate atmosphere, the defeated body language that accompanied a gesture so extreme. But Emmett seemed as confident and defiant as ever as he looked from one leathery scale face to another. The scale became emboldened by Emmett's strange behavior. They hovered ever closer, blocking the thin outcast from Luz's view with the slow intensity of vultures approaching a carcass on a desert highway. Where were the other outcasts? Where was Phil? Had the scale already done away with them? What sounded like thick and heavy fabric being torn echoed loudly through the room. The scale hovered motionlessly, their broad, overlapping cloaks like the gaping mouth of an announcer that led somewhere terrible and sad. Then a slicing sound cut through the air, followed by another tearing sound. And then the four scale angels spun like rag dolls toward Luz, their jaws slack, their eyes open, their cloaks mutilated and ripped open to expose black hearts and black lungs twitching spastically, streaming pale blue blood. Daniel had told the outcasts they could not use their starshots to kill the scale, but he had not said the outcasts could not hurt them. The four scale angels fell to the floor in a clump, like puppets whose strings had been snipped. Luz looked up from where they lay, struggling to breathe, to the alcove, where Emmett was wiping black scale blood from the fletchings of his starshot. Luz had never heard of anyone using the butt end of a starshot as a weapon, and apparently neither had the scale.
"Is Lucinda here?"
Luz heard Phil call out. She looked up to see his face glowing through a crater in the roof. "Here!" Luz shouted up to him, unable to keep herself from lunging as she did so, causing her cloak to cinch even more tightly around her throat. When she grimaced sharply, the cloak tightened a little more. A huge leg drooped over the edge of the table, its black boot swinging into Luz's face, striking her flush on the nose, bringing tears of pain to her eyes. Her captor was awake. This realization, coupled with a sudden pain that half-blinded her, caused Luz to push back more deeply under the table's shelter. When she did so, her cloak closed all the way around her neck, pinching her trachea completely shut. She panicked, gasped uselessly for air, writhing, now that it didn't matter if the cloak constricted anymore. Then she remembered how she'd discovered in Venice that she could hold her breath for longer than she'd thought possible. And Daniel had just told her she could will herself to overcome mortal limitations any time she wanted. So she did it. She just did it. She willed herself to stay alive. But that didn't stop her captor from knocking the sheltering workman's table aside, sending pottery and the severed limbs of ancient sculptures flying.
You look uncomfortable.
He grinned, revealing blood-slick teeth, and extended a black-gloved hand toward the hem of Luce's cloak. But the scale angel froze when a star-shot fletching burst through the place where, only a moment before, his right eye had been. Blue blood jetted from the emptied socket down onto Luce's cloak. He cried out, staggered wildly around the room, arms flailing, the backward star-shot protruding from his wizened face. Pale hands appeared before her, then the sleeves of a ratty tan trench coat, followed by a shaven blonde head. Phil's face betrayed no feeling as he dropped to his knees to face her.
There you are, Lucinda Price.
He gripped the collar of the binding black cloak and lifted Luce up.
I'd returned to the palace to check on you.
He set her atop a nearby table. She immediately fell over, not able to hold herself upright. Emmett righted her, with as little emotion as his colleague had. At last she could afford to take a longer view. In front of her, three shallow stairs led down to an expansive main chamber. In its center, a red velvet rope sectioned off a towering statue of a lion. It was reared up on 2 feet, teeth bared toward the sky, mid-roar. Its mane was chipped and yellowed. Blue-gray wings coated the floor of the restoration wing, reminding Luce of a locust-covered parking lot she'd seen one summer after a Georgia rainstorm. The scale weren't dead. They had not vanished into star-shot dust. But so many of them were unconscious, the outcasts could barely tread without crunching their wings. Phil and Emmett had been busy, incapacitating at least 50 of the scale. Their short blue wings twitched occasionally, but their bodies did not move. All 6 outcasts, Phil, Vincent, Emmett, Sanders, the other outcast girl, whose name Luce did not know, even Daedalus with his bandaged face, were still on their feet, brushing pieces of tissue and bone from their blue-splattered trench coats. The blonde girl, the one who'd helped nurse Daedalus back to health, grabbed a barely-breathing female scale angel by the hair. The old hag's moldy blue wings trembled as the blonde outcast battered the scale's head against a marble pillar. She shrieked the first 4 or 5 times her head struck the stone. Then the shrieks petered out, and her bulged eyes rolled back in her head. Phil struggled with a black straitjacket fastened around Luce. His quick fingers made up for his lack of sight. An unconscious scale angel fell from somewhere above her, his battered cheek coming to rest between her neck and shoulder. She felt hot blood trickle onto her neck. She squeezed her eyes shut and shuddered. Phil kicked the angel off the table, sending him into Luce's one-eyed captor, who still staggered clumsily around the room, groaning.
Why me? I do everything right.
He has the halo, Luce started. But Phil's attention jerked back to the sickly mass of scale angel wings, where a portly scale, with hair like a Tibetan monk's, had risen and now advanced on Daedalus from behind. A coarse black cloak hung over the outcast's head, ready to drop.
I will be right back, Lucinda Price.
Phil left Luce in her binds on the table and knocked a starshot in his bow. In an instant, he'd shoved himself between Daedalus and the scale angel.
Drop the cloak, Zaban!
Phil looked as fierce as he had when he'd first appeared in Luce's parents' backyard. Luce was surprised to realize they knew each other by name, but of course, they must have once all lived in heaven together. That was hard to imagine now. Zaban had watery blue eyes and bluish lips. He looked almost gleeful at finding the starshot pointed at him. He slung the cloak over his shoulder and turned to face Phil, freeing Daedalus to pick up a spindly scale angel by the feet. He swung the old angel around in a circle 3 times, then sent him crashing through the eastern window, out into a tower of scaffolding below.
"Threatening to shoot me, are you, Philip?" Zaban's eyes were on the starshot. "You want to tip the balance toward Lucifer? Why doesn't that surprise me?"
Phil bristled.
"You don't matter enough for your death to tip the balance."
"At least we count for something. Altogether, our lives make a difference in the balance. Justice always makes a difference. You outcasts," he smiled in mock pity, "stand for nothing. That is what makes you worthless."
That was enough for Phil. There was something about this scale he couldn't endure. With a grunt, he loosed the arrow towards Saban's heart.
"I stand opposed to you," he muttered,
and waited for the blue-winged geezer to vanish. Luce waited for the vanishing, too. She'd seen it happen before. But the arrow glanced off Zaban's cloak and clattered to the floor.
"How did you?" Phil asked.
Zaban laughed and pulled something from a hidden breast pocket in his cloak. Luce leaned forward, eager to see how Zaban had protected himself. But she leaned too far and slid off the table. She landed on the floor, on her face. No one noticed. They were staring at the small book Zaban had produced from his cloak. Propping herself up slightly, Luce saw it was bound in leather, the same shade of blue as Scale Angel wings. It was bound with a knotted golden cord. It looked like a Bible, the kind Civil War soldiers used to stuff in their breast pockets in the hope the books would protect their hearts. This book had done just that. Luce squinted to read its title, squirming a few inches closer on the floor. She was still too far away. In a single movement, Phil retrieved his starshot and swatted the book out of Zaban's hand. By a stroke of luck, it landed a few feet away from Luce. She wriggled again, knowing she couldn't pick it up, not the way the cloak was binding her. Still, she had to know what its pages contained. It seemed familiar, as if she'd seen it long, long before. She read the golden letters on its spine, "A Record of the Fallen." Now Zaban ran for it, stopping short of Luce, who lay exposed in the center of the floor. He glared at her and pocketed the book.
"No, no," he said. "You don't get to look at this. You don't get to see all that's been accomplished by Scale Wings, nor what's left to do to achieve the ultimate harmonious balance. Not when you've spent all this time too busy to take note of us, to take note of justice, selfishly falling in and out of love."
Though Luce hated the scale, if there was a record of the fallen, she burned to know whose names were on those pages, to see where Daniel's name was tallied now. This was what the fallen kept talking about, a single angel who would tip the scale. But before Zaban could hurtle any more criticism at Luce, a pair of brilliant white wings filled her vision, an angel descending through the largest hole in the skylights. Daniel touched down in front of her and eyed the cloak imprisoning her. He studied her constricted neck. His muscles strained through his t-shirt as he tried to tear the cloak away. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Phil lift a small pickaxe from a nearby table and slice it across Zaban's chest. The scale angel swerved, trying to spin out of range. The blade connected with his arm. The blow was so powerful, it severed Zaban's hand at the wrist. Sickened, Luce watched the pale, slack fist thump to the floor. Aside from the blue blood streaming from it, It could have belonged to one of the ravaged statues.
"Tie that on with one of your knots," Phil taunted,
as Aban fumbled after his missing appendage among the battered, unconscious bodies of his sect.
"Is it hurting you?"
Daniel tore at the knots binding loose.
"No."
She willed it to be true. It almost was. When brute force didn't work, Daniel tried approaching the cloak more strategically.
"I had the loose end just a moment ago," he muttered. "Now it's riddled up inside the cloak."
His fingers inched across her body, feeling close and far away. Luce wished that her hands, over any other part of her body, were free, so she could touch Daniel right now, soothe his anxiety. She trusted him to free her. She trusted him to do anything. What could she do to help him? She closed her eyes and drifted back to the lifetime in Tahiti. Daniel had been a sailor. He had taught her dozens of knots in their quiet afternoons on the beach. She remembered now. The alpine butterfly, which made a long loop in the middle of a rope with two lobed wings on either side, good for carrying extra weight on a line. Or the lover's knot, which looked simple, heart-shaped, but could only be untied using four hands at once. Each one had to loop a strand through a different portion of the heart's core. The cloak was so tight, Luce could not move a muscle. His fingers trolled the collar, tightening it further. Daniel cursed at how it pinched her neck.
"I can't," he finally cried out. "The scale straitjacket is composed of infinite knots. Only one of them can unbind it. Who did this to you?"
Luce jerked her head toward the blue-winged angel, howling to himself, staggering in a corner by a marble faun. The starshot fletching still protruded from his eye. She wanted to tell Daniel how her captor had taken out Oleana with a flagpole, then bound her up and brought her here. But she could not even speak. The cloak was too tight. By then, Phil had the whining angel in his grasp, gripped by the collar of his blood-wet cloak. He slapped the scale three times before the scale ceased his self-pitying moans and pulled back his blue wings in alarm. Luce saw that a thick ring of dried blue blood had formed around the place where the starshot fletching protruded from his socket.
"Unbind her, Baruch,"
Daniel ordered, recognizing Luce's captor immediately, making Luce wonder how well they knew each other.
"Not likely."
Baruch leaned away and spat a stream of blue blood and a couple of sharp and tiny teeth out onto the floor. In a flash, Phil had a starshot trained between the angel's eyes.
"Daniel Grigori instructed you to unbind her. You will oblige."
Baruch flinched, eyeing the starshot with disdain.
"Vile, vile."
A dark shadow fell over Phil's body. Hazily, Luce processed the sight of another scale angel, the craggy old hag with moldy blue wings. She must have roused herself after she'd been knocked out. Now she came at Phil with the same pickaxe he'd used on Zaban. But then the scale angel vanished into dust. 10 feet behind her, Vincent stood with an empty bow in hand. He nodded at Phil, then turned back to scour the carpet of blue wings for movement. Daniel turned to Phil and muttered,
"We need to be careful about how many we take out. The scale do matter in the balance. A little."
"Unfortunate," Phil said,
strange envy in his voice.
"We will keep the killing to a minimum, Daniel Grigori, but we would prefer to kill all of them."
He raised his voice for Baruch's ears.
"Welcome to the realm of sightlessness. The outcasts are more powerful than you think. I would kill you without a second thought, without a first one, even. However, I will ask again, unbind her."
Baruch stood for a long moment, as if weighing his options, blinking his one remaining wrinkled old eyelid.
Unbind her! She cannot breathe, Daniel roared.
Barach growled and approached Luz. His aged, spotted hands worked out a series of knots that neither Phil nor Daniel had been able to find. Luz felt no relief in her neck, though. Not until he began to whisper something, very low, under his rancid breath. Lack of oxygen had made her feel faint, but the words tunneled into her foggy mind. They were an ancient form of Hebrew. Luz didn't know how she knew the language, but she did.
And heaven wept to see the sins of her children.
The words were almost unintelligible. Daniel and Phil had not even heard them. Luz couldn't be sure she'd heard them right, but then they were familiar. Where had she heard them before?
The memory came to her faster than she would have liked. A different member of the scale, sweeping loose in a different body, into an older cloak than this one. It had happened a very long time ago. She'd been through all this before, bound up and then released. In that lifetime, Luz had gotten her hands on something she wasn't supposed to see. A book, tied up with a complicated knot. A record of the fallen. What was she doing with it? What did she want to see? The same thing she wanted to see now, the names of the angels who had yet to choose. But she hadn't been permitted to read the book then, either. Long before, Luz had held the book in her hands, and, without knowing how, she had nearly untied its knot. Then came the moment when the scale caught her and bound her in the cloak. She had watched his blue wings shudder with intensity as the angel tied and retied the book. Making sure her impure fingers hadn't damaged it, he had said. She heard him whisper those words, the same strange words, just before he shed a tear over the book. The gold thread had unraveled like magic. She looked up at the craggy old angel now, and watched a silvery tear slide from his eye down the maze of his cheek. He looked truly moved, but in a patronizing sort of way, like he pitied the fate of her soul. The tear landed on the cloak, and the knots mysteriously unknotted. She gasped for air. Daniel yanked the cloak the rest of the way off her. She swung her arms around him. Freedom! She was still embracing Daniel when Barach leaned in close to her ear.
You'll never succeed.
Silence, fiend, Daniel commanded.
But Luz wanted to know what Barach meant. Why not?
You are not the one, Barach said.
Silence, Daniel shouted.
Never, never, never. Not in a million years, the angel chanted, rubbing his sandpaper cheek against Luz's,
right before Phil loosed the arrow into his heart. 8. How Heaven Wept. Something thudded at their feet.
The halo, Luz gasped.
Daniel swooped down and snatched the golden relic from the ground. He marveled at it, shaking his head. Somehow it had remained when the scale angel and his strange regenerating clothes had disappeared.
I am sorry for taking his life, Daniel Grigori, Phil said, but I could not tolerate Barach's lies any longer. It was beginning to grate on me, too, Daniel said. Just be careful with the others. Take this, Phil said, sliding the black satchel off his shoulder and handing it to Daniel. Conceal it from the scale. They are hungry for it.
When Daniel opened the satchel, Luz saw his book, The Book of the Watchers, tucked inside. Phil zipped it up and left the bag with Daniel.
I will now return to stand guard. The wounded scale could rouse at any moment. You've done well against the scale, Daniel said, sounding impressed. But we know, Phil said. There will be more. Did you encounter many outside the museum? Their numbers are legion, Daniel said. If you would let us use the star shots freely, we could secure your escape. No. I don't want to disturb balance to that extent. No more killing unless in absolute self-defense. We'll just have to hurry and get out of here before the scale reinforcements arrive. Go now. Guard the windows and the doors. I will be with you in a moment. Phil nodded, turned, and was gone, wading among the carpet of blue wings. As soon as they were alone, Daniel's hands searched Luce's body. Are you hurt? She looked down at herself, rubbed her neck. She was bleeding. The skylight's glass had sliced through her jeans in a few places, but none of the wounds looked fatal. Following Daniel's earlier advice, she told herself, It doesn't hurt you. The stinging eased. I'm fine, she said quickly. What happened to you?
Precisely what we wanted to happen. I held off the majority of the scale while the outcasts found this way in.
He closed his eyes.
Only I never meant for you to get hurt. I'm sorry, Luce. I shouldn't have left you.
I'm fine, Daniel, and the halo is safe. What about the other angels? How many more scale are there?
Daniel Gregory!
Phil's shout rang out across the lofty room. Luce and Daniel crossed the wing quickly, stepping over blue scale wings to the arched threshold of the room. Then Luce stopped short. A man in a navy blue uniform lay face down on the tile floor. Red blood pooled around his head. Red mortal blood.
I killed him,
Daedalus stammered, holding a heavy iron helmet in his hand and looking scared. The visor of the helmet was slick with blood.
He rushed in through the doorway, and I thought he was scale. I thought I would just knock him out. But he was a mortal man.
A mop and bucket on wheels lay tipped over behind the body. They had killed a janitor. Until then, in some ways, the fight against the scale hadn't seemed real. It was brutal and senseless. And yes, two scale members had been killed. But it had been separate from the mortal world. Luce felt sick, watching the blood seep into the grooves of the tile floor, but she couldn't tear her eyes away. Daniel rubbed his jaw.
You made a mistake, Daedalus. You did well to guard the door from intruders. The next one who comes in will be scale.
He scanned the room.
Where are the fallen angels?
What about him? Luce stared at the dead man on the floor. His shoes were freshly shined. He wore a thin gold wedding band.
He was just a janitor coming in to see about the noise. Now he's dead.
Daniel took Luce by the shoulders and pressed his forehead to hers. His breath came short and hot.
His soul has sped to peace and joy, and many more will be lost if we don't find our friends, get the relic, and get out of here.
He squeezed her shoulders, then released her too quickly. She choked back a cry for the dead man, swallowed hard, and turned to look at Phil.
Where are they?
Phil pointed a pale finger skyward. Dangling from a thick crossbeam near the shattered skylight were three black burlap pods. One of them bulged and swayed, like something trying to be born.
Arian!
Luce shouted. The same sack bulged again, more violently this time.
You will never free them in time, a voice warbled from the ground.
A scale member with a fish face rose up on his elbows.
More scale are on the way. We will bind you all in the cloaks of the just and handle Lucifer ourselves.
A bronze shield thrown like a frisbee by Phil nicked off a piece of the scale's scalp, sent him back into the pile of blue wings. Phil turned to Daniel.
If you do need scale assistance to unbind your friends, we'll have more luck while their force is small.
Daniel's eyes burned violet as he flew around the wing, moving from one scaffolded restoration station to another, then to a wide marble table
that looked like one of the museum restorer's workstations. It was stacked with paperwork and tools, mostly useless after that night, which Daniel dug through with intense scrutiny, flinging aside an empty water bottle, a stack of plastic binders, a faded picture in a frame. Finally, his hands seized a long, heavy-duty scalpel.
"Take this," he told Luce,
sliding Phil's heavy satchel across her shoulder. She held it close at her side and held her breath as Daniel arched back his wings and lifted off the ground. She watched him rise effortlessly, magically, and wondered how it was that his wings could make everything in the dim museum glow. When Daniel finally reached the ceiling, he drew the scalpel cleanly along the rafter, slicing through the rope from which each of the three black pods hung. They slipped into his arms without a sound, and Daniel's wings beat once as he carried the whole mass easily back to the floor. Daniel laid the black pods side by side on a bare stretch of floor. Hurrying over to him, Luce could see each of the three angels' faces poking out of the top. Their bodies were bound up in the same type of rigid black cloak that had kept Luce breathlessly constricted. But the angels had also been gagged with a strip of black burlap cloth. Even as she watched, the gags seemed to slither through the mouths of her friends. Arion writhed and strained and grew redder in the face and looked so furious, Luce thought she would explode. Phil glanced at the struggling forms on the ground. He lifted one up under the arms. The scale angel blinked in a daze.
"Would you like the outcasts to select a scale volunteer to help you unbind your friends, Daniel Grigori?"
"We will never reveal the secrets of our knots," the scale angel came to, enough to hiss. "We would rather die."
"We would rather you die too," Vincent said, approaching their circle with a star shot in either hand, drawing one to the throat of the scale angel who had spoken. "Vincent, hold your fire," Phil instructed.
Daniel was already kneeling over the first black cloak, Roland's, working his fingers over the invisible knots.
"I can't find the ends." "Perhaps a star shot would slice it," Phil suggested, holding out a silver arrow. "Like a Gordian knot."
"That won't work. The knots are blessed with an occult charm. We may need the scale."
"Wait!" Luce dropped to her knees next to Roland. He lay still, but his eyes told Luce everything about how powerless he felt. Nothing should restrict a soul like Roland's. Through this cloak, she could see none of the class and elegance that made the fallen angel who he was. Whether he was outfencing all the Nephilim at Shoreline, spinning records at a sword and cross party, or stepping through announcers more deftly than anyone she knew. That the scale had done this to her friend infuriated Luce to the point of tears. Tears. That was it. The Hebrew words came back to her. Her traveling had given her a gift for languages. She closed her eyes and in her memory watched the golden thread fall off the book. She remembered Barak's chapped lips, self-righteously mouthing the words. And Luce said them now to Roland, not knowing what they meant, only hoping they could help. "And heaven wept to see the sins of her children." Roland's eyes widened. The knots slithered loose. The cloak dropped to his sides, and the gag in his mouth slid off too. He gasped for air, rolled to his knees, stood up, and shot out his golden wings with stunning force. The first thing he did was clap Luce on the shoulder.
"Thank you, Lucinda. I owe you a solid for a solid 1,000 years.
Roland was back, but blood pooled from the place where Barak had ripped that false pennon from his wings. Daniel reached for Luce's hand, pulling her toward the other two bound angels. He had watched and learned from Luce. He went to work on Annabelle, while Luce knelt before Arion. Arion could not stay still. The cloak was cinched so tightly around her that Luce almost cringed to look at her. Their eyes locked. Arion made a noise that Luce took to mean she was glad to see Luce's face. Luce's eyes watered as she remembered her first day at Sword and Cross, when she'd seen Arion endure electroshock therapy. The ultra-cool angel had seemed so fragile then, and though Luce had barely known the girl, she'd felt an urge to protect Arion, the way you did with old friends. That urge had only strengthened over time. A hot tear slipped down her cheek and landed in the center of Arian's chest. Luce whispered the Hebrew words, hearing Daniel whisper them to Annabelle at the same time. She glanced at him. His cheeks were wet. All at once, the knots loosened, then unraveled completely. The angels were free by Luce's and Daniel's hands and hearts. A gust was generated by the release of Arian's awesome, iridescent wings, followed by a gentler breeze from Annabelle's lustrous silver ones. The room was almost silent in the moments before both girls' gags came off. Arian also had a piece of duct tape over her mouth. She'd probably been the reason the others had been gagged in the first place. Daniel grabbed a corner of the tape and ripped it off quickly with a crick. "Hot damn! It's good to be free!" Arian shouted, dabbing the swollen red square of skin around her mouth with her fingers. "Three cheers for the Knotmaster, Lucinda!" Her voice had its sparkle, but her eyes were dotted with tears. She noticed Luce's notice and wiped them quickly away. She paced around the wing-strewn floor, making different taunting faces at each of the unconscious scale, lunging like she was about to hit them. Her denim overalls were torn almost to shreds, her hair was wild and greasy, and she had a bruise the shape of Australia on her left cheekbone. The bottom tips of her iridescent wings were bent and dragging on the littered floor. "Arian," Luce whispered, "you're hurt." "Ah, shucks, kid, don't worry about me," Arian offered a lopsided grin. "I'm feeling sprightly enough to kick some scaly old scale ass." She looked around the room. "Sept it looks like the outcasts beat me to it." Annabelle rose more slowly than Arian, spreading, then flexing her muscular silver wings, stretching her long limbs like a ballerina. But when she looked up at Luce and Arian, she smiled and cocked her head. "There must be something we can do to pay them back." Arian's wings fluttered, and she lifted a few feet off the ground, flying around the museum wing in great circles, scanning the wreckage. "I'll think of something."
"Arian," Roland warned, looking up from a whispered conversation he'd been having with Daniel.
"Wah!" Arian pouted. "You never let me have any fun anymore, Ro."
"We don't have time for fun," Daniel told her.
"These fossils tortured us for hours," Annabelle called from the top of the lion's head. "We might as well return the favor."
"No," Roland said. "Enough priceless damage has been done. We should spend our energy finding the second Drolloc."
"At least let us make sure they stay down while we do that," Annabelle said.
Roland looked at Daniel, who nodded. With a smile, Annabelle flitted to a table against the back wall of the warehouse. She turned on a faucet, humming to herself. She poured what Luce assumed must be plaster of Paris or some other casting agent into a bucket and started adding water.
"Arian," she said with bravado, "a hand, please."
"Yes, ma'am."
Arian took the first bucket from Annabelle and flew over the semi-conscious scale, smiling sweetly. Slowly, she began to pour the wet slurry over their heads. It slopped down their sides and gathered in a pool between their bodies. A few of them struggled against the thickening mixture, which was hardening quickly into a kind of artificial quicksand. Luce recognized the genius of the plan. In a few moments, when it dried, they would be stuck in their sprawled positions in rock-like plaster.
"This is not wise," one of the scale burbled through the wet plaster.
"We are making you monuments to justice," Annabelle shouted.
"You know, I think I prefer the scale when they are plastered," Arian laughed, betraying more than a tinge of vengeful glee. The girls kept pouring bucket after bucket, a full bucket over each of the threatening angels' heads, until their voices did not carry anymore, until the outcasts had no need to stand over the scale with their star shots. Daniel and Roland stood apart from the group, arguing in hushed voices. Luce stared at Arian's purple bruise, at the blood on Roland's wings, at the gash in Annabelle's shoulder. Then she had an idea. She reached inside the satchel and pulled out 3 small bottles of diet soda and a handful of star shots in their silver sheath. She twisted off the caps. Quickly, she dipped a star shot into each one, holding the bottles as they boiled and steamed, letting the brown liquid inside turn to silver. Finally, she rose from the corner where she'd been crouched and was pleased to find a Chinese porcelain tray that had somehow survived the battle. "Here, everyone," she said. Daniel and Roland stopped talking. Arian stopped dousing the scale with wet plaster. Annabelle alighted on the lion statue's mane again. None of them said anything, but all of them looked impressed as they claimed their bottles, clinked each other's in celebration, and drank. Unlike the outcast Daedalus, the angels didn't have to close their eyes and go to sleep after they downed the transformed soda. Maybe because they weren't as badly beaten, or maybe because this higher form of angel had a higher tolerance. Still, the drink calmed them. As a final gesture, Roland clapped his hands, igniting a powerful flame between them. He threw waves of heat toward the plastered scale, glazing their plaster coating, making it harder to escape than their cloaks had been. When he was finished, Roland, Arian, Annabelle, and Luce sat down on one of the tall tables facing Daniel. Daniel reached for the satchel and unzipped it to show the others the halo. Arian gasped in awe and reached out to touch it.
"You found it!"
Annabelle winked at Luce.
"Proper!"
"What about the second relic?" Daniel asked. "Did you get it? Did the scale take it from you?"
Annabelle shook her head.
"We never found it."
"We sure fooled them," Arian said, narrowing her eyes in the direction of the scale. "They thought they could beat it out of us."
"Your book is too vague, Daniel," Roland said. "We came to Vienna looking for a list."
"The Desiderata," Daniel said.
"I know. But that was all we knew. In the hours between our arrival and our capture by the scale, we went to 7 different city archives and found nothing. It was foolish. We attracted too much attention."
"It's my fault," Daniel muttered. "I should have uncovered more when I wrote that book centuries ago. I was too impulsive and impatient in that era. Now I can't recall what led me to the Desideratum, or precisely what it says."
Roland shrugged.
"It might not have mattered anyway. The city was a minefield by the time we arrived. If we'd had the Desideratum, they would have only taken it away. They would have destroyed it, the way they've caused the destruction of this art."
"Most of these pieces were forgeries anyway," Daniel said, making Luce feel a little less guilty about what they'd done to the museum.
"And for now, the outcasts can handle the scale. The rest of us must hurry to find the Desideratum. You say you went inside the Hofburg Library?"
Roland nodded.
"What about the university library?"
Yeah, Annabelle said. "And we probably shouldn't show our faces there anytime soon. Arian destroyed several very valuable parchment scrolls in their special collections."
"Hey!" Arian snapped, indignant. "I glued them back together." A thunder of footfalls sounded in the hallway, and all heads shot toward the open archway. At least 20 more scale were attempting to fly into the room, but the outcasts held them at the doorway with their star shots.
One of them spotted the halo in Daniel's hand and gasped.
They have stolen the first relic.
And they're working together. Angels and demons and...
Narrowed eyes fell on Luce.
Those who do not know their place, all working together for an impure cause. The throne does not endorse this. You will never find the Desideratum.
Desideratum, Luce said, faintly recalling a long, boring lesson in her Latin class at Dover. That's singular. She spun around to face Daniel. You said desiderata a moment ago. That's plural.
Desired thing, Daniel whispered.
His violet eyes began to pulse, and soon his entire being seemed to be glowing. A smile of recognition spread across his face.
It's just one thing. That's right.
Then the deep gong of a church tower clock sounded somewhere in the distance. It was midnight. Lucifer was another day closer. 6 days to go.
Daniel Grigori, Phil shouted over the bells. We cannot hold them forever. You and your angels must go.
We're leaving, Daniel called back.
Thank you.
He faced the angels.
We will visit every library, every archive in this city until...
Roland looked doubtful.
There must be hundreds of libraries in Vienna.
And maybe let's try not to be so destructive in them, Annabelle suggested, tilting her head at Arian. Mortals care about their pasts, too. Yes, Luce thought. Mortals cared very much about their pasts. Memories of her past lives were coming to her more frequently. She couldn't stop or slow them. As the angels readied their wings to fly, Luce stood still, debilitated by the most intense flashback. Crimson hair ribbons, Daniel and the Christmas market, a slushy rainstorm, and she hadn't had a coat. The last time she'd been in Vienna, there had been more to that story. Something else. A doorbell? Daniel, Luce gripped his shoulder. What about the library you took me to? Remember? She closed her eyes. She wasn't thinking so much as feeling her way through a memory buried shallowly in her brain. We came to Vienna for the weekend. I don't remember when, but we went to see Mozart conduct the magic flute at the Theater an der Wien. You wanted to see this friend of yours who worked at some old library. His name was... She broke off, because when she opened her eyes, the others were staring at her, incredulous. No one, least of all Luce, had expected her to be the one to know where they would find the Desideratum. Daniel recovered first. He flashed her a funny smile Luce knew was full of pride. But Arian, Roland, and Annabelle continued to gape at her, as if they'd suddenly learned she spoke Chinese. Which, come to think of it, she did. Arian wiggled a finger around inside her ear.
Do I need to ease up on the psychedelics, or did LP just recall one of her past lives unprompted at the most crucial juncture ever?
You are a genius, Daniel said,
leaning forward and kissing her deeply. Luce blushed and leaned in to extend the kiss a little longer, but then heard a cough.
Seriously, you two, Annabelle said. There'll be time enough for snogs if we pull this off.
I'd say get a room, but I'm afraid we'd never see you again, Arian added, which caused them all to laugh.
When Luce opened her eyes, Daniel had spread his wings wide. The tips brushed away broken bits of plaster and blocked the scale angels from view. Slung over his shoulder was a black leather satchel with the halo. The outcasts gathered the scattered starshots back into their silver sheaths.
Wing speed, Daniel Grigori. To you as well.
Daniel nodded at Fel. He spun Luce around so her back was pressed to his chest, and his arms fit snugly around her waist. They clasped hands over her heart. The Foundation Library, Daniel said to the other angels. Follow me. I know exactly where it is.
9. The Desideratum. Fog engulfed the angels. They flew back over the river, four pairs of wings making a tremendous thrush each time they beat. They stayed low enough to the ground that the muted orange glow of the sodium lamps looked like airport runway lights. But this flight did not land. Daniel was tense. Luce could feel it running all through his body, in both his arms around her waist, in his shoulders aligned with hers, even in the manner that his broad wings beat above them. She knew how he felt. She was as anxious to get to the Foundation Library as Daniel's grip suggested he was. Only a few landmarks cut through the fog. There was the towering spire of the massive Gothic church, and there, the darkened Ferris wheel, its empty red cabins swaying in the night. There was the green copper dome of the palace where they landed when they first arrived in Vienna. But wait, they'd passed the palace already. Maybe half an hour earlier. Luce had tried to look for Oleana, whom the scale angel had knocked unconscious. She hadn't seen her on the roof then, and she didn't see her now. Why were they circling? Were they lost? Daniel? He didn't answer. Church bells rang in the distance. It was their fourth ringing since Luce, Daniel, and the others had taken off through the shattered skylight at the museum. They'd been flying for a long time. Could it really be 3 o'clock in the morning? Where is it? Daniel muttered under his breath, banking to the left, following the groove of the river, then breaking from it to trace a broad avenue lined with darkened department stores. Luce had seen this street already, too. They were flying in circles.
I thought you said you knew exactly where it was.
Arian dipped out of the formation they'd been flying in, Daniel and Luce at the front, with Roland, Arian, and Annabelle forming a tight triangle behind them, and swooped down about 10 feet below Daniel and Luce, close enough to talk. Her hair was wild and frizzy, and her iridescent wings flickered in and out of the fog.
I do know where it is, Daniel said. At least, I know where it was.
You've got a circuitous sense of direction, Daniel.
Arian.
Roland used the warning tone he reserved for those too frequent occasions when Arian went too far.
Let him concentrate.
Yeah.
Arian rolled her eyes.
Better return to formation.
Arian beat her wings the way some girls batted their eyelashes, flashed a peace sign with her fingers, and fell back.
Okay, so where was the library? Luce asked.
Daniel sighed, drew in his wings slightly, and dropped 50 feet straight down. Cold wind blasted Luce in the face. Her stomach surged up as they plummeted, then settled when Daniel stopped abruptly, as if he'd landed on an invisible tightrope, over a residential street. It was quiet and empty and dark, just two long stretches of stone townhouses spanning either side. Shutters were drawn for the night. Tiny cars rested in narrow, angled spaces on the street. Young urban oak trees punctuated the cobbled sidewalk that ran along the small, well-maintained front yards. The other angels hovered on either side of Daniel and Luce, about 20 feet above street level.
"This is where it was," Daniel said. It was here, 6 blocks from the river, just west of Turkenschanspark. I swear it was. None of this.
He waved his hand at the stretch of indistinguishable stone townhouses below.
Was here.
Annabelle frowned and hugged her knees to her chest, her silver wings beating softly to keep her aloft. Her crossed ankles revealed hot pink striped socks peeking out below her jeans.
Do you think it was destroyed? If it was, Daniel said, I have no idea how to recover it.
We're screwed,
Arian said, kicking a cloud in frustration. She glared at its wispy tendrils, which ambled eastward, unaffected.
It's never as satisfying as I think it's going to be.
Maybe we go to Avalon, Roland suggested. See if Cam's group has had any more luck.
We need all three relics, Daniel said.
Luce pivoted slightly in Daniel's arms to face him. It's just a hitch. Think about what we had to go through in Venice. But we got the halo. We'll get the desideratum, too. That's all that matters. When was the last time any of us were at this library? 200 years ago? Of course things are going to change. It doesn't mean we give up. We'll just have to... Everyone was looking at her. But Luce didn't know what to do. She only knew that they couldn't give up.
The kid's right, Arian said. We don't give up. We...
Arian broke off when her wings began to rattle. Then Annabelle yelped. Her body tossed in the air as her wings shuddered too. Daniel's hands shook against Luce as the foggy night sky morphed into that peculiar gray, the color of a rainstorm on the horizon, that Luce now recognized as the color of a time quake.
Lucifer.
She could almost hear the hiss of his voice, feel his breath against her neck. Luce's teeth chattered, but she felt it deeper, too, in her core, raw and turbulent, as if everything inside her were being wound up like a chain. The buildings below shimmered. Lampposts doubled. The very atoms of the air seemed to fracture. Luce wondered what the quake was doing to the townspeople below, dreaming in their beds. Could they feel this? If not, she envied them. She tried to call Daniel's name, but the sound of her voice was warped, as if she were underwater. She closed her eyes, but that made her feel nauseated. She opened them and tried to focus on the solid white buildings, quaking in their foundations, until they became abstract blurs of white. Then Luce saw that one structure stayed still, as if it were invulnerable to the fluctuations of the cosmos. It was a small brown building, a house, in the center of the shuddering white street. It hadn't been there a second before. It appeared as though through a waterfall and was visible only for a moment before it doubled and shimmered and disappeared back into the expansive row of modern, monochrome townhouses. But for a moment, the house had been there, one fixed thing in all-consuming chaos, both apart from and apart of the Viennese street. The timequake shuddered to a stop, and the world around Luce and the angels stilled. It was never quieter than in those moments right after a quake in time.
"Did you see that?" Roland shouted, gleeful.
Annabelle shook out her wings, smoothing the tips with her fingers.
"I'm still recovering from that latest violation. I hate those things."
"Me too," Luce shuddered.
"I saw something, Roland. A brown house. Was that it? The Foundation Library?"
"Yes."
Daniel flew in a tight circle over the place where Luce had seen the house, zeroing in.
"Maybe those booty quakes are good for something," Arian said.
"Where did the house go?" Luce asked.
"It's still there. It's just not here," Daniel said. "I've heard legends about these things."
Roland ran his fingers through his thick, gold-black dreads.
"But I never really thought they were possible."
"What things?"
Luce squinted to try to see the brown building again. But the row of modern townhouses stayed put. The only movement on the street was bare tree branches leaning in the wind.
"It's called a patina," Daniel said. "It's a way of bending reality around a unit of time and space. It's a rearrangement of reality in order to secret something away,"
Roland added, flying to Daniel's side and peering down as if he could still see the house.
"So while this street exists in a continuous line through one reality," Annabelle waved at the townhouses, "beneath it lays another independent realm, where this road leads to our Foundation Library."
"Patinas are the boundary between realities," Arian said.
thumbs tucked into her overall suspenders. A laser light show only special folks can see. You guys seem to know a lot about these things, Lou said.
Yeah,
Arion scoffed, looking as if she'd like to kick another cloud.